Ronaldinho to Messi. Will he get that first goal for Barcelona? Remember the name, Lionel Messi. At the age of 17, scores his first goal for Barcelona. Back to Mbappe! What a great day it's been for him!
Oh, spectacular, Thiago!
Haaland, the very accomplished player himself, and Haaland
in behind goes for goal! Oh, what a start to his Dortmund career! One chance, one goal!
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the European Football Podcast, a podcast brought to you by Pure Football, which is the unbiased Scottish voice giving you in-depth insight into football from the local park to the World Cup. And I say the latest episode of the European Football Show, but it's a bit of a getting the band back together type vibe here. We've been away for a number of months due to a global pandemic, just as our pod was about to take over the world. Yeah, COVID-19 beat us to it. And I guess I'm delighted to say that I'm back behind the mic with Byron Hutchison and Andrew Miller. Guys, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, mate. How are you?
Yep, really good and buzzing to be back. Byron, how are you?
I'm good, mate. Thank you.
Good, good. I guess just as a quick reminder or as an introduction to any potential new listeners, are you able to give us a little bit of an insight into who you are and what you do? Byron, let's come to you first.
So for the day job, I'm the international social media manager for the Bundesliga. So I spend my day sort of creating content and managing things on social and doing that sort of thing, content marketing. And then by night or on the side, I have a little side project where I look specifically at Scottish players playing abroad at footballfromafar.com.
Nice. Love it. And I highly recommend that you check out Byron's work if you haven't already. Byron, where can people get you on Twitter if they want to follow you?
Byron Hutchison, at Byron Hutchison.
Nice, no fucking about there.
Straightforward.
Yeah. And Andrew, what about you? Give us a rundown on who you are.
So I am a sort of Spanish and football or European football writer. I manage the social and digital content for La Liga Lowdown. Occasionally make a cameo appearance on the podcast, but for the most part, the work I do is sort of behind the scenes. I rarely do kind of chip in sometimes with Scottish football stuff as well, but generally I try and leave that sort of thing to people who sound like they know what they're doing, like yourself, Gavin, and obviously your co-host, Owen.
I'll take that as a compliment, sound like I know what I'm doing. It's better than
slight
the usual backhanded flapping.
Compliment.
So for tonight, I guess European football has started back up in a few different leagues across Europe. And tonight we just wanted to warm you back into it and bring some thoughts on some of the latest transfers, basically some general information around about that and some of our thoughts. And I guess a bit of a bold prediction that we think we might see across the European stage this year and just some chit-chat around about a few different sides. So let's just get straight into it and let's talk about some of the transfers that we've been excited about or think are worth discussion. So I'm going to come over to you guys first. I can see down here that let's start with the sort of breaking transfers, I guess. It makes the most sense. Thiago Alcantara. Yeah, I've not quite got the Ian Balogie type pronunciation nailed. So yeah, Thiago, we'll stick with that. is close to joining Liverpool for an approximate £30 million from Bayern Munich. And this is a player that I'm guessing both you guys would have seen. Andrew, do you want to give me your opening thoughts on Thiago's move to Liverpool? What would he bring and what do you think of the move overall?
I think generally, you know, it's still to be sort of finalised, but I think the reported fee was around €30 million, which, you know, if you know the player and you know the sort of value he brings, it ends up going to be one of the bargains of the season. They've kind of discussed with Barcelona the potential transfer of Gini Wijnaldum. So if you're swapping Wijnaldum for Thiago, then, you know, I think you're doing pretty well. It's a pretty huge upgrade. You know, Byron will know more than me, obviously been in the Bundesliga, but, you know, he's a bit of everything. You know, he's arguably one of the best midfielders in the world. He can get box to box. He can, you know, really, really contribute defensively. He's good at building up in the attack. Really, really intelligent player. So I think generally for that Liverpool side to be adding a player like that just makes them, you know, even more sort of powerful and even more intimidating.
Byron, what do you think? Do you think that this is a bit of an evolution for Liverpool bringing a player of this quality?
Yeah, I would agree with everything that Andrew said there, really. Thiago's probably one of the best midfielders in the world, at least at what he does in terms of keeping play moving, being able to pick a pass from slightly deeper, winning the ball. He's got a bit of tenacity about him as well. I think he does bring a lot to Liverpool that they probably don't have in the middle of the park. They have a very industrial middle three or three in the middle of the park. And Thiago's got a bit more of tactical awareness, not so much tactical awareness, but technique about him that he'll really add to that team. I think the initial worry for me would be, I think it's reported to be a 4-year deal. Thiago's had his injury problems. He's missed quite a few games for Bayern over recent seasons. But I think if you're Liverpool for the fee reported, it's probably worth the risk in that regard because he really does add a lot to the team that they don't have.
Yeah, I think that's a key part, isn't it? The sort of risk side of it. You're spending, what, £25 million approximately for a player of his quality. You know, we've just seen, Aston Villa spend £28 million on Ollie Watkins from Brentford. And of course, transfer fees are not as simple as just comparing A to B. But in this case, I think when you're getting a player of that quality, it feels like an absolute snip. Byron, what do you think about it from a Bayern Munich point of view? Do you think that is there a longer-term plan in here, or do you think there's something more to it?
I think Thiago wanted to go. And Bayern, having had him for so long, he's been such a good servant for them, have probably decided that it's fine to let him go. And they probably decided that the risk involved is not worth it for them, because I'm thinking more specifically about his wage. Thiago's a big earner, and he'll have been looking probably for a big final payday, and that's maybe why the Premier League was a destination he was sort of looking for. Like I say, a 4-year deal is quite risky, given the money he's probably going to be on. And for Bayern, he wasn't necessarily a starter. You know, they'd started playing Pavard at right back and moving Kimmich into the middle of the park. And I think if Flick were to play his preferred 11, Thiago probably wouldn't be in it. It would probably be Goretzka and Kimmich. So for them, they've lost a bit of depth. They've lost a bit of someone who can be a game changer for them and someone who's obviously good cover if someone were to get injured or whatever. But at the same time, they have someone like Tolisso in the background who can fill that void somewhat, although for me, he's not quite close to the quality of Thiago. But I think sort of financially, and when Bayern weigh everything up, it was probably a decision that they're okay with.
Yeah, I think you've nailed a couple of points, you know, really spot on there. I do think, however, that obviously Kimmich, Goretzka, etc. in the middle are both perfectly fine, but I think Thiago's, I guess we mentioned his technical ability, it's almost a bit of finesse on the ball as well, isn't it? He's really comfortable, and we see that sort of Barca background, don't we, Andrew? It's something that's, you know, when he's on the ball, it just looks like he's a couple of steps ahead of people at times.
Yeah, you can sort of see the sort of typical, I guess, Spanish intelligence that you get from these type of midfielders. You know, they've had so many over the last few years, and as you say, it's a bit of sort of technical flair. He's got the intelligence. He's maybe just a little bit ahead of everyone else in terms of that pass and seeing the space and finding that sort of movement. I totally agree with everything Byron said. You know, it's from a Byron point of view. You know, it's the sort of same thing you get with a lot of players. You can't really keep an unhappy player. And if they're able to get, you know, for Bayern Munich, €30 million isn't a huge amount of money, but they're able to recoup a lot of money for a player whose contract's expiring, you know, I think in the next year or so. So for me, it probably works out pretty well from both ends. And you know, again, as Byron mentioned, they have cover there. It's, I guess, the sort of Bayern Munich way of playing is if they lose this, you know, a specific type of player, it's almost like, okay, you know, next man up, we've got the depth there to handle it.
Yeah. Totally agree with that, guys. And I think, you know, let's stick with Bayern Munich then, Byron. I'm going to come over to you here. We've got Leroy Sané, I guess, in a semi-similar way of, I guess there was mumblings of Sané wanting out of Man City. And I think Bayern Munich obviously exploited that and were able to get him in a little bit cheaper than what his maybe market value was or should be. What's your thoughts on this? Has this deal gone down pretty well in Germany?
Yeah, so I mean, they've been after Sané for quite what feels like ages now, since it was first muted, and Sané was obviously injured. I think was that even last summer, yeah, or at the end of last season when Sané initially got injured and the deal couldn't go through. So for it to finally have gone through is great. Everyone's quite excited to see him play. He's obviously a fantastic player, and he's only 24. You know, so it feels a bit like the sort of Serge Gnabry deal a little bit, except Sané's a bit more, well, quite a bit more established than Gnabry was at that time. But he feels like a real superstar signing. They've brought in a Germany international, a guy who's proven how good he is with Man City under Pep, but it's a real sort of statement signing for Bayern. I think there's been some reports over the last couple of weeks that he's maybe not quite fitting in as well as they had hoped. That's without us play, but it's without them having played a game. But I think after a few weeks, he'll settle in and kick on a bit.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, an outstanding piece of business by Bayern. I think Sané's ability to carry the ball, create, you know, he's done it so many times for Man City, and I think maybe similar to Thiago, both players had their sort of injury background and, you know, things that maybe stopped them from going to the next level. Obviously, incredibly talented players and players that I think, you know, most teams would die to have in their squad. And I think I am a little bit interested to see how he fits in to the Bayern team. I feel like it's the sort of the spots behind Lewandowski, that's probably where they can probably have the most sort of rotation. So it'll be interesting to see how that sort of pans out. Yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on.
Yeah, and if you look at it just quickly from the Bayern perspective, they've essentially replaced Ivan Perisic with Leroy Sané, and I think Perisic is a good player, but that's quite a significant upgrade for them. So it's a good move all round, and they've still got Kingsley Coman there, who's also 24. So on the left wing, they're quite stacked, and if you consider Alphonso Davies is going to be overlapping, it's a bit of a scary thought.
Yeah, that is terrifying. Absolutely terrifying. Imagine Aaron Hickey having to try and defend those two. So, yeah, I guess, would we quite comfortably say then that the early business that Bayern have done, or the business they've done so far, should I say, sorry, has been good all round? They've done what they had to do, and they're not really any worse off than they were last year. Obviously, they've added the additions of Tanguy Nianzou, is that how you pronounce it? And Alexander Nubel, on fairly minimal costs to the squad, both younger players. So would you say that Bayern aren't really any worse off than they were last season?
Yeah, I mean, I think the loss of Thiago will affect them a bit, just in terms of depth. Corentin Tolisso, like I say, is probably not the same quality and isn't exactly reliable in terms of injuries himself. So they've maybe lost a little bit there, but the addition of Leroy Sané probably outweighs that for me when, like I say, if you consider that Thiago probably isn't going to start and Leroy Sané is coming in and replacing Perisic or Coman is quite a significant upgrade in my opinion. So I would say they've probably gotten a little bit stronger. It's just in terms of that depth throughout the season, especially when you consider that we're coming off the back of a pandemic hit season that dragged on for a long time. The players have had, especially the Bayern players after the Champions League final, they've had 2 weeks break, really nothing. So it's a sort of thing that might catch up with them when we get to maybe January or so. They've also lost Odriozola as well. Not that he got much game time, but they're lacking depth at right back. They only really have Pavard, and then Kimmich can come in, obviously, but then you have to play Tolisso. So there's some little things there that might cost them, I think. Throughout the course of the season, though, they're undoubtedly the strongest team in the Bundesliga. And even if they had to rotate, you would expect them to win every game they went into. But there's sort of pros and cons there. I think that they're probably still searching for a right back and a little bit more depth. But overall, pretty solid business from them.
Bayern, just while we're on the topic of obviously Bayern Munich, you know, they lost, as you say, they lost Ivan Perisic, they lost Philippe Coutinho. Do you think there's still, you know, possibly another attacking player to come in there? You know, they're not incredibly deep at that sort of centre forward behind Lewandowski, and you know, he's luckily been available for a lot of the season. He doesn't have a huge amount of injury issues, but do you think there is potentially still some room there for a little bit of added depth? You know, you mentioned they added Leroy Sané to replace Ivan Perisic and Philippe Coutinho, but that's sort of still a two players out, one player in. Do you think they maybe still need someone else just for that little added sort of cushion, particularly given Sané's injury history?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I don't think they'll necessarily go to the transfer market to sort of solve that issue, though. I could see there was plenty of players from the reserve team and from the B team who got a lot of minutes last season. And I could see Miguel Cuisance, for example, getting a bit of game time this year. Joshua Zirkzee will probably get a bit more game time after impressing last year. So if and when Lewandowski misses games here and there, last season they were replacing him with Gnabry up front and then sort of doing a bit of a makeshift thing with the three in behind. You're right, though, there's a couple of problems that could arise there, particularly if Müller or Lewandowski go down. But I could see, like I say, Cuisance or Zirkzee or someone along those lines getting a couple of more minutes than they did last year, especially being a year older and having that experience as well.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see what happens. And let's stay in Germany for now. And Andrew, I'm going to come to you for this one first. Borussia Dortmund picking up Rainer Jesus Carvalho, in my finest Hispanic attempt, on loan from Real Madrid. What's your thoughts on this move?
Byron and I sort of spoke about this before when the move was announced off air, and I'm still a little bit unsure about it. You know, for a club looking to develop players, I would say Dortmund are probably one of the best in the world at it. So I think the move from the player's point of view is a bit of a no-brainer. But really, I'm still a little bit unsure on his level. He's your sort of typical Brazilian. He loves having the ball at his feet. He's quick. He's strong. He's a particularly big lad given his age. I think he's about 6'2", 6'3". He's got the sort of power and pace to really crack on. But I think given his sort of inexperience at a sort of first team level, I'm a little bit unsure. I feel like maybe Real Madrid would have been better off trying to find somewhere that he's going to get a lot more game time. And I know particularly at that age, you know, first team game time isn't the end all be all. You know, there's a lot of development, a lot of coaching points about it as well. But he didn't really play a huge amount of games with the Castilla team. He's had a lot of time off, obviously given the pandemic. So I don't want to sound pessimistic about it, but I just don't know if he's going to be able to have a big enough role in this Borussia Dortmund team. You know, it's obviously possible that there's injuries and he has to play, but I think one of the other main things that I guess I am a little bit optimistic about is that Dortmund are probably a pretty good team for him in terms of finding his position. He's sort of played as a number 9, he can play as a number 10, he's played off the left wing. He's had that sort of secondary striker role before. It's still sort of difficult to see where his best position is going to be. So I think that's going to probably be one of the most interesting points about it for me, is how he actually moulds, or how Dortmund mould him into a specific role. But again, I do have the sort of concerns there, given the game time and his actual ability at such a high level, given that, you know, there's not a huge amount of expectation at Dortmund in terms of, you know, they're fighting for the title and they're fighting in the Champions League. But I think it's not really going to be a sort of do or die year for him. He's obviously going to have a really bright future no matter where he goes, given his age. But I'm a little bit unsure about the level and whether he's going to be good enough to actually feature consistently for Dortmund at the moment.
Yeah, there's certainly a few questions for me just around about how he fits in. There seems to be a lot of younger players in the more advanced areas for Dortmund. And I don't know if it's maybe the sort of high intensity style they want to play, that they maybe need to have that element of rotation. But to me, it feels like Dortmund are maybe playing a little bit of football manager here, which I know we're all privy to, but picking up these sort of players, do you think that's enough to get them closer to Dortmund? To Bayern? Bayern? That's hard to say.
I'm not 100% sure. The sort of the big thing around Dortmund so far this season has been that they've kept the squad together, and that's been kind of championed as like a really good achievement. But obviously they weren't necessarily that close to winning the league last year, and I'm not sure that just keeping the squad together is enough. I think they could have done with a few additions. It's not even just that they've kept the squad together. They've also lost Hakimi, who was quite a big player for them, and replaced them with Munir, which could work out for them. And even out with that, the transfer window's not over yet, right? So they might lose Sancho, something might happen. As far as Rainier goes, I think he's probably going to be competing with Marco Reus and Giovanni Reyna for game time, I would assume, unless Sancho does go. And as Andrew said, if I'm being 100% honest, I'm not totally sure of his best position. So maybe he finds himself on the right if Sancho does go or space opens up somewhere. But for now, it's hard to see him getting immediate game time. I think he'd probably be a backup for at least for the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I guess there's probably an element of similarity to that with the other sort of major transfer in Jude Bellingham. So the 17-year-old brought in from Birmingham City after quite a tremendous campaign in the Championship at the age of 17, played 41 games domestically, which is a hell of a lot. I guess an intense league. It's quite a physical league. Bellingham was part of the Birmingham City team that I don't know what their expectation was other than just to stay in the league, but he managed to achieve that. But more impressively, I guess, was his individual performances. He carries the ball really well. He creates opportunities. He can get into advanced areas. He works hard off the ball, competes, tackles, you know, lots of things to like about him. But I'm just curious as to how many minutes he's likely to get for Dortmund in the sort of central areas. He can play in the wide spaces too, but again, it just feels like these are areas for me that Dortmund maybe have quite a few options. Any thoughts on that, Byron?
So Bellingham's done really well since coming in. He scored in the Pokal last weekend, 5-0 win over Duisburg. And I think he scored in his first game in a friendly as well. And So I agree with you. I think on paper, people might look at it and think, oh, there's Julian Brandt, there's Axel Witsel, there's Thomas Delaney. There's quite a lot of options in centre midfield. But I think Favre prefers playing Julian Brandt slightly further forward. And the position alongside Witsel really isn't nailed down by anyone. And given Bellingham's impressive performances in the Pokal game and in pre-season, I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe even start this weekend. He might have an opportunity to kind of establish himself quite quickly. Obviously, he's young, so I could see him being dipped in and out of the team or whatever, and I might be being a bit bold with saying he'll start this weekend. But if I remember correctly, when he was first signed, Dortmund were sort of putting out the spiel that he would be sort of slowly fed into the team with a view to getting him maybe starting after Christmas. But just because of the way he's played and the way he's settled, I wouldn't be surprised if they accelerated that a little bit. I think they were maybe just tapering expectations when he first arrived.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I won't put you on the spot with this one, Byron, but I don't know if you've seen it or not. Andrew, the announcement of Jude Bellingham, the Hey Jude, did you see that?
I did, yeah. I wasn't a huge fan of it, to be honest. We sort of discussed it slightly with Byron. A little bit over, like, cheesy for me. I don't know if I'm just a grouchy old man now, but I wasn't a huge fan of it.
For what it's worth, I think, just to chime in, when I was at Dortmund recently, Erling Haaland was singing Hey Jude at Jude Bellingham. So I think it's been a bit of a hit within the club, at least. So
I guess that's all that matters, right? Who cares what people like us think, as long as it's going down with Haaland and it keeps him happy? A tick in my book. Okay, let's go with it. I guess a transfer out of Germany, and then we'll move away from there. Quite a lot of talk here, but this was one that I quite liked, was Chelsea picking up Timo Werner. I think Werner is an incredible player who's proven at the biggest stages in the Bundesliga, proven in the Champions League, and I think he's an actual focal point that Chelsea can. I guess, build their team around. They've obviously added Havertz as well, which is another incredible transfer. But I think for me, Werner's pace and his ability to get in behind defenders, drop deep, drop into the half spaces, I think he's the exact sort of focal point that Frank Lampard wanted for his team. And I think he's just an absolute outstanding signing. I know it was fairly expensive, but I think he's the sort of player that could be there for 4 or 5 years, and you can rely on him to be a consistent performer. He was, you know, in terms of his domestic performances for Leipzig, he was involved in all phases. Byron, I'm assuming you've seen him a little bit more. What did you think about this move?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good pickup for absolutely anyone. I can't remember the fee off the top of my head, but I think it was actually quite cheap for what I was sort of thinking. Because I think he's potentially going to be one of the best strikers in the world. He's still only 24. He's a proven goal scorer. He's, like you say, absolutely rapid. He's a great finisher. And he's really come into his own over the last couple of seasons. I think Chelsea have done a great job. I'm not 100% sure how he'll fit in with sort of Frank Lampard's style of play. But if I'm being honest, whenever I watch Chelsea, I'm not 100% sure what Frank Lampard is going for. So that's maybe more on me not watching him quite so much. But I think he'll score goals in the Premier League for sure. I don't have any doubts about that. I think the only thing that really maybe concerns me is it's slightly dependent on how and where they play him, and the acquisition of Havertz as well. Maybe isn't quite as natural a fit as I think some people would like to believe. Timo's played on the left before, he's played through the middle. I think he's probably at his best in terms of as just an out-and-out goal scorer when you play him through the middle. There was quite a few times last season, for example, where he was playing alongside Patrick Schick, and he was pushed out left, and he was often quite quiet in games. He's not really a natural facilitator if he's on the wing and that sort of thing. He does create space for himself. He does get in good positions from the left, but I think you lose a little. So a lot of it depends on what Frank Lampard decides to do with the system. But I think wherever he plays, he will score goals. So overall, like a great pickup. And I just wish he hadn't gone to Chelsea, to be honest. But that's neither here nor there.
Andrew, have you got any thoughts on this one?
I think, yeah, like as you, like, you know, as Byron said, I think the fee was somewhere around sort of £47-48 million, which, you know, in today's market for a player who, you know, what did he score, 30 something goals last season, 10 plus assists in the Champions League and the Bundesliga, is it really a lot of money for a player who's that good already and still only, what, 24, 25? I think it's a pretty smart move from Chelsea. They, you know, as Byron mentioned, they picked up Kai Havertz, they have Hakim Ziyech, they already have, you know, like Christian Pulisic. They have a lot of attacking talent there, and I guess, you know, can you really have too many options getting forward? They had a lot of issues defensively last season, which obviously they're sort of addressing as well with Ben Chilwell, and they've already signed Thiago Silva. A really good deal for me. I think Chelsea, over the last couple of years, have done pretty smart business. They've been aiming for younger players, which is something we'd all like to see, obviously, other than Thiago Silva. But yeah, really smart business for me. As Byron said, he's a really, really smart player. He's a huge goal threat. He's got pace to burn for years, as do a lot of the other players in that sort of Chelsea front line. So, you know, I really no fault in this business, in this piece of business. You know, there was a lot of teams that ideally would have liked him. You know, they sort of swooped in and took him off Liverpool, which I quite appreciate to see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, really, really smart piece of business. I can't fault the decision to sign him at all. It's a shame for Leipzig. You know, they were such a fun team last season. They have been for the last couple of years. He's been so integral in them sort of coming up into the Bundesliga, getting into that top 10, getting into the Champions League positions. They obviously did really, really well last season in the continental competitions and stuff as well. So, you know, smart business all round, I think.
Yep, definitely concur with that. So let's stay in the Premier League, and Andrew, I'll come to you, this one for our Spanish insight into Sergio Reguilón. Okay, I'm going to leave the pronunciations over to you from now on. He'll just be known as Sergio. So how do you think he's going to fit into Jose Mourinho's all or nothing season? It does kind of feel that way a little bit for me with Spurs. No. I guess it was a pun intended, but yeah, it just feels a little bit like Mourinho. I guess first I'll get your take on this, but Mourinho didn't feel like a great fit for Spurs based on what they had with Pochettino, and then come to me on what you think about Sergio coming in.
Yeah, it was a pretty strange move. I think getting rid of Pochettino was the wrong decision, regardless of who else they were going to bring in. You know, he brought so much success to them. They were so close to winning the Champions League. He's still a relatively young coach. He's pretty pretty forward thinking. He's modern in the way he plays football. And then they've gone sort of, for me personally, you know, people may disagree with this, but I feel like they've maybe gone backwards. Mourinho, for me, has had a lot of issues in the last couple of years, particularly with his sort of man management. You know, he's rubbed a lot of players up the wrong way. He's tough. He's very sort of old school disciplinarian in the way that he manages. For me, it's like almost a complete 180 from going from Pochettino to Mourinho. Pochettino was very close to his players. He had a sort of, I'm sure he could kick off at times, but, you know, he had a sort of softness about it. He had that kind of arm around them and let this be a learning, you know, teachable moment rather than shouting and swearing and all that sort of stuff that obviously we know Mourinho does. In terms of the fit with Sergio Reguilón, generally, I think there's, you know, any team in the world would probably fit pretty well with him. He's very much a kind of all action, almost a, you know, he gets really involved in the build up. I think he's almost got that sort of old school fullback way about him. He's very physical. He's strong. He's very quick. He's a really good passer vertically. He likes a sort of forward pass. He plays the long ball really well. He presses a lot in that sort of Sevilla system last season under Julian Lopetegui. He played a really big role in the build up on that left hand side. Positionally, he's really strong. He's got that sort of Kieran Tierney mould almost, that he's not got the, you know, the technical flair and all this sort of fancy stuff that I guess comparatively, you know, Marcelo at Real Madrid, he's a very, very flashy player. He's got that sort of Brazilian style to him. Reguilón's just very sort of, I am in here to do a job and I'm going to get the job done. So I can't really fault the business. You know, 30 million euros roughly is what the fee's been suggested, the deal. As far as I'm aware, hasn't been done. He's due in London to do his medical tomorrow, so I'm assuming that'll be announced at any minute. But generally, I think it's just a really good signing. He's still very young. He's got experience in, obviously, he won the Europa League last season with Sevilla. He's got experience in playing against the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona. He came through the Castilla Academy, so he's got that sort of coaching from the Real Madrid side of things as well. To be honest, I'm a lot sort of really surprised there wasn't a lot more teams lining up, given the price that Real Madrid were quite happy to let him go for. So for me, really, really smart piece of business. And again, his age, you know, there's obviously going to be huge resale value there if he does do well in the Premier League.
Yeah, definitely think it's one to monitor. I guess just quickly, it wasn't on our list to talk about, but there's also sort of breaking news that Gareth Bale is close to completing a loan move from Real Madrid to Tottenham, where he obviously went from. What's your thoughts on this one? Do you think that's a right move for all parties? I thought that Bale and Mourinho weren't a particularly great fit first time around, but I could be remembering that completely incorrectly. But yeah, any thoughts on that one, Andrew?
I mean, from the player side and the Real Madrid side, it's good. They needed to do something about it. They had to get him off the books financially. I think the sort of unhappiness in the relationship that him and Zidane had was broken, inconsolable, you know, long, long, long ago. For me, the Tottenham side of things, it's not really the most intelligent move, and it sort of doesn't really fit with their sort of philosophy. You know, Dan Levy's a pretty good negotiator. They're relatively tight when it comes to money. You know, they're always looking for that sort of financial edge. Gareth Bale earns somewhere around 600,000 euros a week at Real Madrid. Even if he, you know, there is obviously rumours that he'll obviously reduce that to go to the Premier League, but even if he halved his wages, that's still, you know, 300 grand a week. That's still going to make him the highest paid player at Spurs by a pretty long shot. He's 31 years old. He's, you know, barely played in the last year. He's had a lot of really serious injuries. His ankle and his calf are absolutely shot. He's been criticised throughout his career. You know, you mentioned the fit with Mourinho. He's been pretty harshly criticised throughout the last couple of seasons particularly, but during his career as well, as being sort of lazy, not the hardest worker. It feels like a sort of match made in hell for me.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, going back to that wage financially, you have to weigh up the opportunity cost of that signing. If you bring in an attacking player who's earning that sort of money, you're going to have to expect that they're going to be able to contribute 25, 30 goals a season. And to me, you know, watching almost, I guess, probably just about every game that he's played in the last few years, he's just not that player anymore. The physical edge that he used to bring when he was at Tottenham and earlier on in the last couple of years with Real Madrid, the pace, the power, the ability to just absolutely blow by people, he just doesn't have that anymore. The deal at the moment, as suggested, has been a one-year loan deal with an option to buy. Buying him permanently, you know, kind of going back to that Reguilón point, there's going to be absolutely no resale value in this deal at all. They're going to be signing the player on, you know, astronomical wages on probably, I guess, minimum a 2 or 3 year contract. If the injuries continue the way they have in the last couple of years, that's just a huge financial drain with sort of very little gain on that. And I don't want to be totally negative about it. You know, I think the situational change, getting away from the Madrid fans who are, you know, notoriously harsh and critical, getting away from that situation with Zinedine Zidane. You know, I don't even know if the player and the manager speak to each other anymore. It's that point. And you know, a situational change, a change of scenery could obviously do him a huge amount of good. But again, that injury worry is just always going to be there. And I think if you're going to be paying top-class wages, you have to have a top-class player. And for me, Gareth Bale just isn't quite at that level anymore.
Yeah, I concur on that one. Byron, have you got any thoughts on Bale to Spurs?
I think it's a terrible move for Tottenham. I think it's really a sort of sentimental thing more than anything. Maybe they're trying to curry some favour. It's not, full disclosure, I'm an Arsenal fan, but Tottenham isn't, they're not in the best place at the moment. Their fans don't seem particularly happy. And it does feel a little bit like this is, they're kind of hoping this will tide them over for a bit. But if you look at it on paper, I'm just looking now, Gareth Bale's not played 30 league games since 2014-15. And in his whole career, he's only managed to do that in four seasons, actually, and three of them were for Tottenham. So he's rarely fit. He doesn't really seem too interested in football anymore, to be totally honest. Maybe being back at Spurs will sort of rekindle something within him. Maybe he'll get involved, but I don't see him really adding a lot to the team that they don't already have with someone else. And I can't really see who he necessarily replaces in the starting 11, to be honest, especially under someone like Mourinho, who requires hard work, requires sort of defensive discipline. Gareth Bale doesn't scream that sort of player to me. So I would be kind of all out on that if I was a Spurs fan, despite the sort of obviously sentimental value that it has for them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fairly summed up there. And I guess we'll move on from the Premier League to our one and only Serie A transfer, and Sandro Tonali, Football Manager wonder kid, who's joined AC Milan on a one-year loan deal with an obligation to buy, which is a move that I think we're seeing a little bit more in football these days. I think especially clubs in Italy seem quite keen on this loan to buy, and we've seen it in Scotland as well, actually, recently with Jamie Murphy and Ross McCrory. But Tonali is sort of covered as the next Pirlo, and he's someone that I think a lot of people in the football world are quite excited about the future of him. He's someone that I think will be the sort of player that potentially can give AC Milan the sort of shot in the arm that it feels they need. He's already got three caps for Italy at the age of 20, and he's came from a struggling Brescia side where he was a standout player, and pretty much anything good that happened for them was through his ability. And I think there's something to be said about being a player that's at a young age playing particularly well for a struggling side, and I think this is one that, I do think it has that potential to be the sort of move that, you know, kickstarts AC Milan back into waking up, because it does feel a bit like they're the sleeping giant just now. And obviously, they've got Zlatan in again this year. But the Italian league is, I think, it's quite a difficult league now. There's obviously Juventus with Pirlo and Inter with Conte. So it's going to be tough for them to get there. But I do just have this feeling that this is the sort of move that galvanises a club almost by having this, you know, the player that's going to be the focal point of your midfield for the future. And they talk a lot about his sort of, you know, his leadership as well for someone so young. So yeah, I'm really interested to see how this one goes. Do either of you have any opinions on Tonali other than how good he is in Football Manager?
Yeah, I think, I guess just even before we get into the how good the transfer is for AC Milan, you kind of have to question what Inter were doing. You know, they've been chasing him for the best part of 2 years now. They've been linked with him a lot. There's been discussions between his agent and then the club and both clubs together. And, you know, here come their slightly less successful, slightly poorer next-door neighbours straight in and swoop. So it feels like a kind of strange deal, not so much from AC Milan side, but just the fact that they were actually able to get it over the line. I totally agree with what you say. You know, it feels like that sort of injection of the kind of youth leadership, the player who knows what it means to play for a big Italian club. You know, you mentioned his involvement in the Italian national team. He's got that kind of leadership ability. I think his passing is going to be a big thing for them. They've brought in Brahim Diaz from Real Madrid as well, who's obviously a really exciting young player. I kind of like this squad now. They've always been a sort of weird dumping ground. They've kind of picked off a lot of stragglers from other teams around Europe in the last few seasons. But it kind of feels now like they've actually got a squad there. It'll be interesting to see what other moves they do. But yeah, I totally agree with everything you say. You know, it feels like a really smart move if they can get him on a permanent and a long-term deal. You know, obviously, as I've kind of gone back to, I don't want to keep harping on about resale value, but he's the type of player that you could easily see, you know, Juventus or Real Madrid signing for, you know, 70, 80, 100 million euros in a couple of seasons. So it's obviously a huge benefit long-term to the club. And otherwise, you know, if they do keep him, he's the type of player that they're going to get huge longevity out. You know, he's really, really young and he's probably still got a lot of development to go. So I think it's just a win-win, you know, all round for AC Milan.
Yeah, I think it's also worth really focusing in on as well. He's channeling his inner Pirlo with his Barnet, so fair play to him for that. Byron, any thoughts on Tonali before we move on?
Yeah, just to echo what Andrew was saying, really, that I think it's a really good deal for Milan. I think getting a player like Tonali, who's had one season in Serie A on loan, and then sort of seeing how he does at that slightly higher level for Milan, and then having the option to buy him is a great move from them. I'm just slightly surprised that no one else was really in for him, not just within Europe, but not just within Italy, sorry, but within Europe as a whole, because he's obviously a really highly touted player and a very good player. And it's not like he's completely unknown, right? Everyone knows about him. So I'm surprised Milan were the ones to get him, but I think he'll do really well there. When you look at how he performed last season for Brescia and the players he was playing alongside, throw him into the middle of the park, being able to provide for Zlatan or Çalhanoğlu or Rafael Leao or whoever, I think he'll really excel there. I think it's a great pickup from them. And like I say, just surprised that no one else sort of jumped on that.
Yeah, I think it's definitely one to keep an eye on. I think it's not necessarily he's going to come in the first year and be an absolute superstar, but potentially in 2-3 years, we could see someone that's a generational player that's going to be around about Milan. But I guess that sort of sums up our early transfers that have gone through so far in Europe. There's obviously loads of amazing moves. Is there anything that you guys want to give like a hot take on, or anything you're just keeping a wee beady eye on? Anything at all, just on the spot?
Andrew, you can go first, mate.
Not really. We sort of mentioned the deals, the sort of likes of maybe Gini Wijnaldum heading to Barca, which I think is pretty unlikely. You already mentioned sort of Reguilon and Gareth Bale heading down to Tottenham. So I think we've probably covered the main ones that have been sort of mentioned. Obviously, as you say, there's a lot of ones that have already gone through that we can discuss, but it's not really a huge amount of sort of rumours flying around, particularly in La Liga at the moment. So I think probably just the ones that we actually have knowledge of that have gone through sort of going forward. I don't know if maybe Byron has one or two he's keeping an eye on.
There's a few sort of moves in the Bundesliga slightly lower down the table that have interested me. Max Kruse coming back to the league for Union Berlin is really exciting. He's a great player. He's sort of, if he wasn't such a crazy character, he would have had a lot more Germany caps. So having him back in the league is great. But I think my bold prediction is, maybe unexciting as it is that I think FC Cologne have done a lot of really good business. They've brought in Andrzej Duda from Hertha Berlin. They brought in Sebastian Andersson from Union Berlin. They sold John Córdoba to Hertha Berlin. I think they are building quite a nice little team. And I think they might, it's not so bold, but either way, I think they might finish in the top 10 this year, which would be really good progress for them. And between, like I say, between Duda, Florian Kainz, Sebastian Andersson, I think they've got a lot of nice, exciting players. So they could be quite a fun team to watch this year.
I do like how in the Bundesliga, occasionally you get, like, I think it was maybe a couple of years ago, Mainz were in the race for the top four, and I think Frankfurt are the same, you know, recently. I do think occasionally you get that in the Bundesliga, which you maybe don't get in some of the other major leagues.
To be fair, I think it's almost, sorry to cut you off, I think it's almost every year. Every year some team will pop up and they'll be sitting fifth in January or whatever. And for me, if Cologne were that team, it wouldn't be a huge surprise just because of the recruitment.
Yeah, definitely one for us to keep an eye on. I'm going to give you, just before we get over to your bold prediction, Andrew, I think I just wanted to give a quick honourable shout out to Anthony, who was picked up by Ajax from Sao Paulo.
Yes.
He scored on his debut, and I have a feeling that he's going to be the next one to go from Ajax for mega bucks. Like, I can see him being a 60, 70 million pound sign into, you know, Barca or Real. I can just see that happening now. I can just see it in 12 months' time. He has an incredible season. Plays for the Brazil national team, lights it up, destroys it with Ajax and goes for mega money. So that was just my one transfer that I wanted to give a quick shout out to. But yeah, Andrew, come to me and talk to me about your thoughts on something crazy that could happen or something that's a little bit bold that we should keep an eye out for this season.
I wouldn't say it's particularly bold or crazy, but I think Villarreal, and I can get sort of back onto the business stuff that they've done, but I think if they don't make the Champions League this season, it's going to be a bit of a disappointment, particularly given that, you know, at the midway point of the season last year, they were sitting around that sort of 10th and 11th place. They've signed Unai Emery. They, strangely enough, after they got themselves into Europe at the sort of at the death of the season last year, they fired Javi Calleja. They have signed Dani Parejo from Valencia. They've signed Francis Coquelin from Valencia. They've just signed Pervis Estupiñan from Watford. They've just done a lot of really, really good business. They got Taki Kubo in from Real Madrid on loan. They haven't really lost anyone. They lost Santi Cazorla, which is a, you know, maybe who fans who potentially don't follow Spanish football maybe think that he's this sort of older guy whose career is just totally shot with injury. And to be fair, that is true. But he was probably one of the best midfielders in the world last season. It was you know, absolutely mesmerising to watch. So that's obviously going to be a big loss. But they've brought in those two really experienced midfielders from Valencia. They've got a new coach. They've got a sort of improved back line. They're going to have a full healthy squad and Gerard Moreno and Paco Alcacer up front. So for me, really, they should be aiming for a really, really deep Europa League run this season. And if they, you know, as I say, if they didn't finish within that sort of top four or five next season, I would say it's been a pretty big disappointment, just given the moves and the investment that they've made so far.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been some interesting move, and absolute shout out to giving a 7-year contract. I can't think of ever seeing that before. I can't think of any transfer that I've seen that's been more than 5 years.
It's only really sort of Spanish teams that seem to do it. You know, Byron made the point in the group chat the other night. Iñaki Williams at Athletic Club's on a 9 or 10 year contract at the moment.
That's the one I couldn't remember. Sorry,
the longest one that I think. The Athletic Club, to be fair, are probably the main one that do it, but generally it's only really Spanish teams that seem to give these huge contracts out to players. But, you know, at the end of the day, if it works well for them, then so be it, why not?
Definitely one to keep an eye on. So I'd like to say that you guys have been probably like a Comic Sans bold with your predictions, and I'm about to give us fucking wingdings. Or whatever it's called.
Wingdings. Is that the one with the fucking crazy symbols?
Yeah. Wingdings and bold. I'm going to say that Juventus are going to do a double of Serie A. And I also have a feeling that they're going to win the Champions League. And it's completely unfounded. And I'm not willing to hear any arguments as to why I'm wrong. But I've just got this strange feeling that Pirlo is going to come in and just be an incredible coach, much like what happened with Zidane at Real, where he is able to just get the players going that extra level for him because of who he is. And then I was thinking about, well, is the Juventus team actually good enough to do so? And then I thought, well, yes. Obviously, Ronaldo's past his prime, right? We're not in any denial about that. But the guy's still incredibly talented, and loads of teams would love to have him in their starting lineup. There's just no denying that. I think he's an incredible penalty box finisher and someone that he can also serve as a distraction, right? He can serve as someone that's going to have defenders focusing on him rather than maybe the parts that are round about him. And I just thought with Juventus this year that we might see a bit of a step up from Dybala, who's obviously a huge fan of the Scottish Championship. So we've got to get that in there. I think he tweeted about, I can't remember what team it was now, but he tweeted about someone in the Scottish Championship, which is absolutely incredible pattern. Douglas Costa is someone that I really like, but I'm really, really interested to see how Dejan Kulusevski does after his spell at Parma. Was bought from Atalanta whilst on loan at Parma. and I've got a feeling that he's going to be a very, very special player. And I think the addition of Arthur, Andrew, you can tell me if I'm wrong here. He seems like, from what I've seen of him and looking at his data profile, I think he's got a harder time than he's maybe deserved for, you know, looking at his actual ability on the ball. He had one of the best passing success rates. He had an excellent dribbling rate. And these are like completed passes and completed dribbles. He was creating chances. I just don't get why he wasn't quite a fit for Barcelona. It looks like on paper he was doing all the things that you would have expected from someone like that. So for me, getting Arthur at the age of 23 and swapping Pjanic was an incredible deal for Juve in their favour. And yeah, I've just got a really strange feeling that we're going to be 12 months down the line and Sami Khedira is going to be lifting up the Champions League. So there we go.
You think Pirlo's the Weston McKennie whisperer, do you?
Yes.
I'm not quite convinced by that, but yeah.
Yeah, same here.
I'm not sure on that move. I'll give you that. I don't particularly get that. That's maybe a more of a commercial one, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if you guys... Is that total wingdings? Have I made myself sound believable at all?
You're not full wingdings, I don't think, but you're getting there. I think with Bayern, it's still hard to... We were talking about it off air, and Andrew made the point. It's still hard to foresee anyone better than Bayern Munich at the moment. Obviously, as the season progresses, and like I mentioned earlier, it's a sort of difficult season because of injuries, potential injuries. Players are going to be tired. Things are going to change quite dramatically just because of how exhausted everyone's going to be by February, March. Whatever, it could go anyway. Juventus are obviously one of the stronger teams in Europe, so I don't think you've gone fully mental there. I think it's a reasonable shout, but I can't see it myself.
Yeah, I sort of mentioned it briefly off air a couple of days ago that I don't quite think Andrea Pirlo is going to be the next Pep Guardiola straight out of the bat, but I think just moving on from what did I call him, Smokey Joe last week. moving on into a new sort of coaching style, I think he's going to be able to get the best out of the midfield, which I think is probably one of the strongest points of this Juve team. On Arthur Melo, the point, I think more at Barcelona, it wasn't so much his ability, it was more his attitude. He came across a bit of an arsehole the majority of the time. He didn't quite have that sort of team spirit with this Barcelona team because they're such a mess at the moment, but he wasn't quite the... He didn't quite have the mentality and the attitude that they needed. I think they needed him to create a little bit more. They signed him from Gremio thinking that he was going to sort of be able to move right into that kind of Xavi and Iniesta role. And I think maybe the expectation was probably a little too high on that, but definitely his attitude was one of the main issues. You know, you mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo. He's still, even though he's not Cristiano Ronaldo from the last couple of years ago, he's still probably one of the most effective and prolific scorers in the entire world. Paulo Dybala, for me, is going to be the main sort of key player in this. He almost feels like he's always sort of felt like he should be one of the best players in the world, and he's just not quite hit that. So it almost feels like there's a lot more still to come from him, even though he's, you know, what is he, 27, 28 now? He's not exactly the kind of young Argentinian superstar that we always thought he was going to be. So, yeah, I think I probably agree with Byron. You're not fully on the wingding board, but... I would say it's probably still considered a hot take, just given how strong Bayern in particular, as I've mentioned, and then obviously you've still got Man City, Liverpool, you still have Real Madrid, Barcelona, God knows what they're going to be this year, but they're still one of the best sides in the world, so there's a lot of competition that's obviously going to go with that.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting season.
Just a quick question there for Andrew, because Luis Suarez is obviously... pretty close, apparently, yeah, by all counts, to Juventus. What do you make of that? Because I have my own opinion, but you're the guy that's watched him for the last few years.
We kind of talked about him today. So he is in Italy today. So he's in Italy right now to find out, well, it's not so much to find out now, to sort of finalise him processing his Italian, they call it Italian nationality process, but it's basically just his Italian work visa.
Yeah.
I don't think the deal is done just yet. I think that's more of a... He still very much wants to be a Barcelona player and he's still very much hoping that there's a place for him. But I think he obviously knows that it's unlikely. So you sort of have that backup option there. Ronald Koeman sort of came in all guns blazing, you know, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Got rid of a load of people, told everyone that they were going to be sold and that he didn't want them anymore. So I think the potential for him to be back into the squad for the season's pretty low. But to be fair, I still think it's a pretty good deal for Juve. He's got a lot of injury issues, particularly over the last couple of years. And he's a lot slower than what he was. He's not quite as sharp. But if you still look at his sort of goal-to-game ratio, and obviously his probably one of the most underrated parts of his game, I think, is the creation ability that he has. You know, he always has a huge amount of assists, and I think maybe that's a little bit skewed, having played with Messi and obviously Neymar for the last couple of seasons as well, before he left. But he's still probably one of the most effective strikers in the world. So I think, and they're going to get him on a free, so they're not going to have that same sort of transfer fee, all the agent stuff that comes with that. And obviously they can make the most of that strange, I can't really remember what the actual tax law is, but it means they can basically pay a higher salary without having as much of the taxation to pay, or the, I don't know if it, what the sort of equivalent of national insurance and stuff is in Italy, but financially it's probably going to be a pretty decent deal for Juve, providing it's not on a long-term contract. So I actually kind of like the deal. They lost Gonzalo Higuain, so they have to replace that that old man goal scoring from somewhere.
I just quickly, just whilst you were speaking, pulled up a comparison between Suarez and Messi last year. Now, I know Messi obviously had a down year, but you'd be really surprised at how close this is. And I'll send it over to you guys after. And for anyone listening, tough luck, you kind of see it. But it's really, really interesting when you look at their underlying numbers. There's not a huge variance. And you maybe necessarily wouldn't think that off the sort of top of your head.
It's strange to watch Suarez, because the last, well, definitely this season, he obviously dealt with a lot of injuries and stuff, but you watching him, you sort of just thinking, like, this man is absolutely dead on his feet, and then he'll score three goals. It's like he almost doesn't even need to be in the game. He can have that 2 or 3 minute spark where he get the 2 or 3 goals and he's done the job. So he's obviously not going to be as effective or as consistently effective as you would think or as you would hope, but he still has the goals there to prove it. So I think, you know, if he can shoulder some of that goal scoring load in Cristiano Ronaldo, and he's obviously, as you say, he's worked as a sort of facilitator to Messi and Neymar for so many years, that I think stylistically he probably would suit playing with Ronaldo more, because he doesn't need the ball at his feet all the time. He's got used to playing that sort of Robin to the Batman with Messi, that I think would be probably quite a good fit alongside Ronaldo.
Yeah, it's definitely one to be interested in and see how it goes. I think what we'll say is that Luis Suarez is the Uruguayan Bastos. I don't know if any of you guys seen this, where Bastos scored a hat-trick only getting 12 touches in a full game, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it's very Bastos.
Hasn't he just signed for someone? Did Brian, did you not say he had just signed for someone recently?
No, Bastos is still at Frankfurt.
He was linked with Spurs recently. I've seen that, but yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that's what it was. Yeah, it was Spurs.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I thought that was incredible. 12 touches, 3 goals. So
love it.
Yeah, absolutely love that. So definitely some interesting things happening across Europe. And I guess thank you to everyone that's listened so far. Guys, can you just quickly recap where people can find you if they want to get you online? Andrew, let's come to you first.
So on Twitter, I am still Andrew Miller, NBA. Don't really use Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that, so Twitter's really the best place to get me.
And Byron?
Yeah, same for me on Twitter, just Byron Hutchison. And if you want to read about some Scottish players overseas, footballfromafar.com.
Nice one, guys. It's been a pleasure, and we'll be back soon.